a gigantic Mahalanui Loa to shoot and the peeps from the Lone Star State who are on island visiting. This is Jonathan Jay. It's just after 4 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon here in Hawaii. Not sure where you are. Could be any time in the world. The planet is round. It's exactly midnight somewhere. And it's exactly now everywhere. You've got it tuned to KKCR. Hanalei, K-A-Q-A, Kilauea at 91.9 on most of the island, 92.7 in Moloa'a and Anahola, 91.9 on the North Shore, streaming live around the world on kkcr.org, 95.1 on the cable, and 104.7 over on the gathering place, Oahu. So wherever you are, here we are, and here you are, and thanks so much for joining us on this beautiful Thursday, Friday afternoon somewhere in the world. We got Out of the Box coming up next. We got a great guest and a lot of issues to cover, so stick around. We'll be right back with more after this.
Kalaheo Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, postural training, cold laser therapy, and spinal decompression. Open Monday through Friday, now a second location in Kapa'a, 822-0711, or Southside Center at 332-5580, or online at kalaheochiropractic.com.
Qingyang Shopping Village proudly supports Kauai's community radio by underwriting this program. Qingyang, the heart of Hanalei. Mahalo Jeff Culverhouse for your support.
Hey, mahalo to Kalaheo, Kalaheo Chiropractic, and Qingyang Village. KKCR and Out of the Box is made possible with viewers just like you, listeners just like you, peeps just like you, in partnership with those underwriters. They not only help the station survive, but thrive. They've made an investment in community radio, and you can too. We've got a pledge drive coming up, always looking for new members, and we're so happy to be here on Kauai. We're so fortunate and so blessed, and I'm so grateful to all of the people over the last almost 20 years who put all the time and effort and sweat equity and financial resources. So if you've ever been a donator to KKCR, if you've ever made an investment in this community resource, then mahalo nui loa to you. You can at any time go on to the website at kkcr.org and click on the donate button. And then starting in a couple of weeks in October, through the 5th through the 15th, we're going to have our fall membership drive, our fall fund drive, our fall pledge drive. And it's a way that you can get involved and help KKCR move forward. You can help us in our mission, which is to bring the news and the views, the musics that are underrepresented in the world, neither left nor right, but quieter than the dominant mainstream voices. It's a non-commercial radio, and money does not make the big decisions here. You do. The volunteers do. So if you want to get involved, if you want to plug in at KKCR, welcome aboard. I want to thank Dan O'Flattery. He's a brand new member here on the community affairs team. And this afternoon we have a guest, a journalist, John Lettman. He's just come back from Okinawa. Lives here on Kauai, but he's going to be telling us a little bit about what he discovered. It's another beautiful island in the Pacific, far, far away, but so close. So I want to do this, because this is a critical thing to do.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
And as Dave Giroux is so fond of saying, that's right. I love it when he does that. I miss you, Dave. Come back. We'll do a show. Come back for the pledge drive, the membership drive. We'll lasso some listeners just like you. So there is a ton of stuff going on in the world, and it's a busy, busy place. We have, I wanted to take a moment to send out a fond farewell to Tech Nickerson. I don't know if you ever got a chance to meet Tech, but he was a super, super great guy. lived on the island for about 10 years. I think he was originally from Connecticut. I met him about 10 years ago. He wanted some architectural design work done. And we had all kinds of interesting conversations and, you know, political observations and sort of philosophical discussions and rants. And I bumped into him about 2 weeks ago, and he said, "Hey, Jonathan, do you remember those conversations we used to have?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah." And he's like, "Well, I wanted to tell you how different you are from those days, how much you have matured, how much you are more calm, how much more compassionate, and how much more effective a communicator you are." And I was like, "Wow, Tech, that's here's that $10 I owed you." But I was so surprised, because he came up to me at a public meeting, and he made a point to tell me this thing. I was like, "Wow, that's really great." And then we started talking about something else, and we did not get a chance to finish our conversation. So I wrote him an email the next night. I said, "Hey, aloha, Tech. We did not get a chance to finish our conversation, but I wanted to say how much I appreciated what you had to say to me." And he had just volunteered to become the treasurer of the Ahupua'a Councils of Punamoku. And I thanked him for stepping up and showing leadership, and I told him that I'd do a great job. And I didn't hear from him. And then 2 days later, I heard he was dead. I was like, "Wow. We're here. We're not here. And all we have while we're here is now." So if somebody's done something great, or if they've impressed you, or if you just love some aspect of them, don't miss an opportunity to tell them, because you might not be here tomorrow, and neither might they. So that's a gift that Tech gave me, which is really gracious for, and I wanted to give it to you so that you could benefit from this guy that maybe you never even met, because that's how we make ripples in the universe. It's a wonderful thing. And the Ahupua'a Councils of Punamoku are going to be having their meeting this Sunday at the Kapa'a Library from 5 to 7. So everybody welcome to attend. If you live on the east side, you live in the district, the Moku of Puna. But if you live somewhere else, find your Moku, find your council. You live in an Ahupua'a. That's what's most important to you. Start with where you are. Work with what you got. Do what you can do. What else is going on in the world? Oh, the GOP clown car. They had another edition. They rolled into the center ring, in the three-ring circus, and you just can't believe how many of these GOPsters crawl out of their little car. You're like, "Wow, really? I think there was 11 people on the stage? Is that about right? Do you know?" Ooh, mics. There we go. I want to get the mics up in the house here. And I didn't watch all of it because I just don't have the stomach, but I watched some of the highlights, and it was really fun to see Trump and Jeb, like, debating with each other, or just really kind of giving each other a hard time. I'm like, "Yeah, I like that." And they all took turns talking about how emaciated the U.S. global military machine is. I'm like, what planet are they talking about? But, you know, everybody's got a perspective. And then the various ideas they had to more effectively defund full medical family planning services to people in our country. And I was like, "Wow, that's another interesting way to look at the world." But, you know, we have the best democracy money can buy. Upcoming also is International Peace Day. I think we've got on the upcoming equinox. It's going to be September 21st, 22nd. You can go to unify.org. That's unify.org. That's a global peace meditation and event coordinating group. They have things going on all over the world. And here on Kauai, I'm not sure the date and time, but there's going to be an interfaith peace picnic at Lydgate. So if there's an Akamai listener out there who knows the scoop, please do call in to 826-7771 a little bit later in the show. Yeah, we our hearts go out to the folks in Chile. They had a big tsunami there, like an 8.3 magnitude earthquake. And they sent ripples out across the ocean. I don't know what it looked like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning when it showed up here, but I went down to the beach this morning, and it didn't seem like there was too much wash. But, you know, I think they're still digging out in Chile. So, you know, everywhere you go, people around the world, We're all in it together. So hearts out to folks in Chile. We're going to take a little musical break here real quick if the internet isn't broken.
No, it's not working right now.
The internet is broken.
No, it's not broken.
Where do I click dislike on that? Evidently nowhere. So then, instead, we're going to go right to our wonderful guest this afternoon. This is journalist John Lippman. Say hello.
Aloha, Jonathan.
It's not just me. It's our beautiful.
And aloha, KKCR.
There you go. John and his lovely wife and son live down in Na'a Willy Willy,
mm-hmm.
right on the city on the bay, Lihue. And you've been on Kauai for how long?
I've been here since 2001. So what's that? About 14 years.
Such a short time.
Yeah, just it went by in a blink of an eye.
Yeah, like 2 weeks in years.
Something like that.
It's amazing. But so nice that you're here, and you're a journalist, and you've written for a number of publications around the world. I made a list a moment ago, and if I can find it, I will rattle them off. But if I can't, maybe you can tell us.
I can help you. Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I'm a freelance journalist, and I write for a number of different publications locally, nationally, and around the world. Some that you may have heard of: Foreign Policy and Focus, Interpress Service, Christian Science Monitor.
I've heard of that one.
Al Jazeera.
I've heard
English,
of that one.
Al Jazeera America, Truth Out, and others.
So, and I first came across your articles a couple of years ago. I think you were writing maybe about the PMRF, the Pacific Missile Range Facility. I thought that was very interesting. That's our little crown jewel weapons testing facility, open range. They like to blow stuff up.
That's right. I went out there. I was invited out actually about a year ago, and they were gracious enough to take me around on a tour and show me what's happening there and how it fits into the bigger picture of the Asia Pacific,
which is where we are. We're like in the command center almost.
Yep. U.S. Pacific Command is just across the water over on Oahu.
Yeah, and I got the chance to speak with Captain Bruce Hayes. Really nice guy. And it was really interesting, the conversations we had, because I think it's the first time that I've ever heard a military person, because I asked him the question, like, well, we spend a lot of money on what you guys do, and there certainly are arguments for and against that. But every dollar we spend there, if we weren't spending it there, we could be spending it somewhere else. And so I asked him, if we weren't spending, these dollars in the military, where else do you think we could spend it? Where else are we falling short? And I was really surprised and impressed for him to talk about, he felt that mass transportation, economical, affordable, mm-hmm. sustainable, efficient, mass transportation, be like, yeah, we could put some more resources into that. And it's like, wow. How often do you hear uniformed officers, command officers talk about what else money could be spent on besides the military?
Yep. That's one more good reason to talk to people.
Find out what's
on their mind.
I think so.
What's on their heart.
Yeah. Like Saint Vandeveer.
Mm-hmm.
You remember listening to Michael Vandeveer?
Absolutely.
Well, he used to frame this show as Kauai's answer to the New World Order. So today we're gonna get to what is the New World Order. But let's hear about Okinawa, because you've been there a couple times, but this is the first time you went to the Big Island.
Okinawa Island. Correct.
Yeah. So, but it's not just one island, just like Hawaii is not one island.
That's right, yeah. Okinawa is a very interesting and beautiful place in the southern part of Japan. It's situated, if you're not familiar, it's between the large southern island of Kyushu in Japan and the eastern part of China, and just above Taiwan and a little bit to the southeast of the Korean Peninsula, and then a bit north of the Philippines. So it's right there in the heart of Northeast Asia. It's in a really pivotal part of that region of the world.
What you said is pretty confusing to me, though, because I thought it was in between Japan and the Philippines, about 1,000 miles off the coast of China. I thought Okinawa was Okinawa, but you said it was part of Japan?
Yeah, exactly. Okinawa Prefecture. Okinawa Prefecture is a prefecture is the Japanese equivalent of a state or province. So think of state.
Okay.
Okinawa prefecture is made up of the main island of Okinawa, and then you have a number of other islands, dozens, in fact, probably close to 100 smaller islands.
So is it kind of a Japanese state in the same way that Hawaii is an American state?
Kind of. Okinawa was its own independent kingdom. It was called the Ryukyu.
Oh, just like Hawaii.
Yeah, it was a Ryukyu kingdom. And it was independent and operated on its own for hundreds of years, and it traded very vigorously with China and other neighbors.
Oh, just like Hawaii.
Yeah, and it was annexed by a larger power to the north, which is, of course, Japan, through a series of events in the 1870s.
Oh, just like Hawaii. Did they sign a treaty with the Japanese, or did the Japanese just decide it was theirs?
Well, treaties were signed, not necessarily everybody. All the players weren't necessarily on board,
Just like Hawaii.
There are certainly a number of parallels, and there are also a number of differences, but...
Well, tell us a little bit about Okinawa, because I don't know anything about this place. I was confused between Okinawa and Guam.
Oh, completely different places. But Okinawa, what I've seen of it, it's beautiful. It's really stunning. And, you know, that says something when you come from a place as beautiful as Kauai, and then you go somewhere like Okinawa, and your jaw drops, and you say, wow, this is gorgeous. There are a lot of similarities. You see some of the same plants, of course, with different names.
Do they have albizia trees?
I did not see albizia trees.
Do they have African tulips?
I did not see African tulips.
That sounds good for Okinawa.
Yeah, some of the invasive things that we have here I did not see. I'm sure they have their own problems with invasives.
If you're just joining us, thanks so much for sharing your afternoon with us. We're speaking with John Lettman. He's a journalist, lives here on Kauai, and he's just come back from Okinawa, and he's kind of telling us about the place. I'm going to ask you to hold off on calls for a little bit. We kind of set this thing up, and we're going to open up the phones maybe in about 20 minutes or so. But please tell us more about this amazing place, Okinawa, that I really don't know anything about, and I bet a lot of people don't.
Yeah, well...
But there's a lot of Okinawans here.
Correct. I don't know the exact numbers, but there are probably between 45 and 50,000 Hawaii residents who are of Okinawan descent, including our governor.
Right, David Ige.
He's, I believe, third-generation Okinawan. He's three generations back. His family was from Okinawa.
And I met David Iha. He's one of the directors at KAC and the board of directors. And he's a smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
So are all Okinawans so smart?
Well, it's a diverse community, just like anywhere else. And so you've got all kinds of folks. But the people that I met were fantastic. Very welcoming, very warm, despite political tensions and whatnot. People were just immediately accommodating and went out of their way to show me what makes it such a beautiful and special place for them. I had people accompany me when I was going to see important sites. I had one very wonderful man, also named Iha. He took me up into this place called the Yambaru Forest.
Have you heard of it? Yambaru.
Yambaru. Well.
I have a good ear, but I've never heard of it before.
Yeah, well, a lot of people haven't. I hadn't until I started reading about it and learning more, but Yambaru is in the northern part of Okinawa. Now, Okinawa Island...
Oh, yeah. Describe the island for us.
The main island. Well...
How does it relate to, say, like, Kauai?
And as far as size, it's...
Size matters.
It's a little... Well, in this case, it does. And it's a little bit smaller than Kauai Island. It's about 20% smaller than Kauai.
Okay.
However, the shape is completely different. Whereas we're pretty round.
Yeah.
It's kind of a long, amorphous island, made up of bays and peninsulas.
So it's got lots of parts that stick out all over the place.
Exactly.
It's
hard to say it looks like a boot or it looks like a shoe or it looks like a horse's head. It doesn't really look like
it. It looks like a horse's head with a boot and some shoes on it.
It looks like Okinawa.
Okay.
But it's lots of peninsulas and bays, and it's very long and thin. You
okay.
could say that.
Okay.
But again,
how long is it? Can I ask that question?
Sure.
That...
You could drive from the southern part of Okinawa to the northern part. If you were to make no stops and run into no heavy traffic, it would probably take maybe half a day.
So it's like 6-7 hours?
Perhaps.
Okay, so
it's
longer than Kauai, more skinny.
More round. It's long and thin, but it kind of sticks out in odd places and has lots of bays and peninsulas.
Sounds beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's very densely populated in the south.
Is it volcanic?
You got me there. I believe it is, but it's much, much older than the Hawaiian Islands. So the formation is different, the look is different, the beaches are different, the topography is different. It's relatively hilly and flat or flatter in the south, with broad bays and lots of caves, limestone caves.
Oh, wow.
Which were played an important role in the Battle of Okinawa.
Which we can get to.
We'll get to. And then in the north, it's more rugged and mountainous.
And there's jungle. And there's mountains.
Dense jungle. There are mountains.
They're like 3,000-4,000 feet, like the same size as the mountains here? Or?
Perhaps, yeah. Okay. It's not Everest, but there are significant mountains.
Is it warmer than here?
When I was there, it's considered subtropical. So we're at, what are we, about
like
22 degrees
yeah,
north? Yeah,
uh-huh.
Like the restaurant, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're probably a little bit north, or they're probably closer to 28 degrees north.
So pretty close.
So we're about the same latitude as southern Taiwan, I believe,
okay.
Here on Kauai. They're north, obviously, of Taiwan and south of Kyushu, Japan. So a little bit north of here, so it's subtropical. And yet it's as hot or hotter there. When I was there, it was very hot and humid. And you've got the cry of cicadas. You're familiar with cicadas, right?
I am. It's sort of a keening.
Yeah. So there are definitely some differences as far as the plants, the look, the feel. But it's remindful of here, but in many ways so different. So
what makes Okinawa Okinawa? What how is it not Japan? How is it not China? How is it not the Philippines?
What
makes it uniquely it?
It is Okinawa because they have their own very distinct culture. They have their own distinct language, their own distinct history. And just like you wouldn't go to Tibet and say, oh, you folks are Chinese, you wouldn't go to Okinawa and say you folks are Japanese. Okinawans have a very long and, I think, proud sense of their own identity and, again, their own history and their, you know, experiences, which are distinct from Japan and distinct from China. But they have a history of trading and being partners with.
Well, they've been there for a long time, I imagine.
A long time,
like
yeah,
thousands
exactly,
of years.
Exactly. So yeah, it's definitely different, and I think it's easy to lose sight of that, and I think people kind of just lump it together and say it's a Japanese island when it's in fact it's an Okinawan island which is now part of Japan.
What was the driving force or a particular incident that caused you to have such interest in that region?
Well, it's in our front yard or our backyard. It's, you know, it's part of the Asia Pacific, which is we're smack dab in the middle. So it's always interesting to see, you know, how people are living and the experiences that people are having in other places that may be similar to where we're at, for example, Hawaii. So, you know, I've been there, I'd heard about it, but I have never actually spent time there, so I wanted to see for myself what it was like, and it was just a fascinating experience.
And what caused you to make the decision to move there? I understood you lived there.
I did not live there. I was living in Japan before I came. Yeah, I was living in Osaka, Japan before I came to Hawaii. And when I was living in Japan in the 1990s, I went down to Okinawa for just a vacation. And I went to a smaller island. It would be the equivalent of going to Molokai or going to Kauai, where it was not the main central hub, but it was a smaller island, and it was pretty undeveloped. It was a lot of sugar cane, not a lot of people, and there was no military there. Whereas in the main island of Okinawa, there's a lot of U.S. military presence. And so this time when I went back, I wanted to see that aspect. But in fact, I saw much more than that. I saw all the forest and the birds and the scenery of the coast. It was really fantastic.
And obviously, or perhaps you could explain, have you noticed a difference in the attitude towards the U.S. ever since the buildup of the military bases?
I'm not sure how to respond to that.
Well, tell us about the people. Tell us about some of the people you met.
Oh, I just met a lot of really interesting and kind, open, independent people who really wanted to show me why they care about this place so much. People who are really, in some ways, similar to the kind of people you might meet in Hawaii. They cared very deeply about protecting the environment, I think. And there is a great awareness, just like there is in Hawaii, of protecting biodiversity and protecting animals and plants, which are found in many cases, no place else.
So we have a term, as you know, as everybody knows, called aloha. Do they have a similar term that roughly translates?
There's the Okinawan language, which sadly is not spoken nearly to the degree that it was in the past, and you just don't
just
hear
like
it
as much. Hawaii.
And there are some parallels there, but there's not a term that I know of that equates to or could be compared with aloha. But there's another term which is very important in Okinawa, which is called, if I don't butcher it, nuchidu takara.
Nuchidu takara.
Yeah, it basically means life is precious. So maybe you could say that's similar to aloha. It's different, but a part of that, I think, comes out of the experiences that people had, the very raw, bad experiences during the Battle of Okinawa in 1945 and the tremendous suffering and loss. But I'm sure it's got roots before that, where just this really strong understanding that, you know, life is precious and you've got to protect it, whether it's human or animal or plant. And so I think that's something that you hear over and over again, this nuchidu takara. And it's brought up again in a number of different situations.
Well, that's worth thinking about for a minute. And if you're just joining us this afternoon on Out of the Box, we're speaking with journalist John Lettman. He's just come back from a trip to Okinawa. And we're going to take a little break. But I want you to say this term again, because it's something to think about. And then we'll be back in a minute. And so thanks for sharing your afternoon with us here on Out of the Box. What is this?
Nuchidu takara.
And what does it mean?
Life is precious.
Can we start? Or do we need to speak?
You're listening to Out of the Box. You're just joining us here on your glorious Thursday afternoon, or your early Friday morning, or your late Thursday afternoon. You know, it's now. And thanks for sharing your time with us here on Out of the Box. We're speaking with journalist John Lettman. He's done a lot of work for Al Jazeera, Christian Science Monitor, Truth Out. And we're really fortunate that he happens to live here on Kauai. And thanks for coming up to the studio.
You bet. Thank you for having me up here.
Oh, it's really nice. I just want to also say this is Jonathan Jay. I've been hosting the show for the last couple of years, but I'm so happy and pleased to have Dan O'Flattery joining us on the community affairs team here at KKCR. It's so great to have another set of hands in here, just like helping with the phones, helping block out the shows, doing research on your own topics. You filled in a couple times. It's so great to have you on the team. I really appreciate that, Dan.
Thank you for that. Thank you for the opportunity. Excuse me.
Well, it's not me who's providing that to you. It's all of the people who listen and help support the station. So thank you guys for giving us both the opportunity. And I understand that You got some family on the island today.
I do. My dad is getting married, so I got some family tuning in, and they listen to KKCR, the ones that live here, but got some folks from off-island, so aloha. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, congratulations. And did they call you Dano as well? Or?
No, I'm known as Daniel.
Daniel, okay. Well, I'm going to keep calling you Dano just because I think it sounds cool. And, it, you know, it's Hawaii, right? So we're talking with John Lettman, journalist, about Okinawa. You kind of described the place, kind of described the people a little bit.
Jonathan, if I can jump in here, you asked about the shape of the island. I have a map here. I'm going to unroll this map.
So we're going to. Do I have to?
Can you see? I mean, are you?
Is this like a Rorschach test?
This is, well, it might be.
To me, it looks like some kind of a multi-pronged martial arts weapon that you might have like three or four blades on it that you can throw and it would tumble through the air. I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to describe. But like I said, if you were to say anything about it, it's kind of a long, thin island, and it's marked by peninsulas and bays.
Yeah, it's got like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 major peninsulas and then a whole bunch of extra ones on there, too.
Exactly. And heavily populated in the south. Now, what's remarkable, and we talked about this a little bit before, is that it's about 20% smaller than Kauai.
Okay.
Geographically. The population is about 20 times greater than Kauai.
Wait, 20 times?
Yeah, 20. So imagine 20% smaller Kauai with 20 times the number of people. What do we have on Kauai now? It's about
like
70,000 or
yeah,
so.
With a rolling average of like 10 or 15,000 visitors.
So 20 times that's about 1.4 million people, which is what they have on this island. So it's a lot of people.
That's like the population of the entire archipelago.
That's like the state. I mean, state of Hawaii, we have, what, 1.3, 1.4 million people.
Well, some people say it's not a state, but we do have a lot of people living here.
In the Hawaiian Islands, we have, yeah, roughly that number. So on an island that's 20% smaller than Kauai. Now,
that's a lot of people. They must really be crammed in there.
They are. In the southern part, if you can, this keeps curling up on me, but in the southern part of the island down here from the central part south, it's very densely populated. So if you've ever been somewhere like Singapore or Hong Kong or Japan, that's the kind of population density we're talking
about. So you're saying that the almost 1.5 million people live on less than half the island, is what it looks like.
Right. Now, add to that, you see these colored patches here, the green and the orange.
Looks like it's kind of like it's got some sort of rash.
Some people call it that. What you have here, these all represent U.S. military bases.
Wow. Yeah. That's like almost a quarter of the island.
It's a little less than 20%.
Wow.
So 20% of that island are military bases. About 32.
Why do the Okinawans have so many military bases?
Well,
are they trying to... What's up with that?
A lot of people are asking and have been asking that for a long time. This goes back to World War II. You know, you had the Battle of Okinawa.
But I don't remember Okinawa as being like a major military power. Why do they have 32 military bases?
Well, Okinawa is not a major military power, but it sits in this pivotal spot, as we said before, between China, Korea, Japan, Taiwan, and the Philippines. Right in the center, you have Okinawa.
So then whose military bases are there?
Those are U.S. military bases.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
You've heard of that. So
I have, but I don't know why the U.S. would have 30 military. That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah. But remember, we've got military bases all over the world. Depending on what you consider a base or what you consider a space and what you consider a place or an installation, sometimes it comes down to semantics.
Well, one of the semantics I like to point out with Dave Giroux, a wonderful host of this show, he would talk about, you know, we have this many military bases over here. And I was like, when you say we, Dave, do you mean you and me?
What is he referring to? Probably the U.S. military.
Yeah, but like those aren't my bases, and I'm pretty sure those aren't his bases.
You pay taxes, don't you?
I work very hard.
You pay your
to not pay taxes.
Well,
just like Donald Trump.
Well, I wouldn't compare you, but you were probably paying some taxes, and so you know that's all supporting all of this. So you've got hundreds of bases, by some count, 800 or more around the world. You know, a lot of them concentrated in places like Japan and in South Korea and in Germany.
And in everywhere.
Not everywhere, but a lot of places.
Where does the U.S. not have a, let's draw back from Okinawa for a minute and let's talk about the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
Where does the U.S. not have military bases?
Well, let's see. Where do we not have them? I don't think we have anything in Chile. I could be wrong. I don't think we have a military base in Antarctica.
I was gonna guess Antarctica.
I could be wrong. I know we have one in Cuba called Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah. Now that, I always thought that was weird. Like, how do the Cubans feel about that? Like, what if the Cubans had a military base in San Diego?
No. That's not possible.
Oh.
It's not okay.
So, oh. Okay.
So no military bases in Iran?
Not at the present.
But if you look at them, yeah.
They're surrounded by U.S. military bases, though, yeah?
There have been, and yeah.
And the U.S. Invaded countries on either side of them.
Iraq, Afghanistan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure they still have troops in there. I mean, so we've all stopped talking about that because that was like yesteryear. That was like not even a decade ago, but I can't even remember when I last heard anything about U.S. forces in Iraq or Afghanistan.
You could have heard it last night on the GOP debate.
Oh.
It came up.
What did they say?
Well, I mean, a lot of things were said, but most of it came down to, and I think, as you said, there were 11 candidates on the stage. They were all talking about, and I think you alluded to this earlier, concerns about the number of bases that we have or their perceived lack of. Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina, said that if he were president under his watch, we would open more bases. Carly Fiorina, she's running for president. She said that we need the strongest military on the planet.
Doesn't the U.S. already have? Well, I looked at the military budgets of the U.S. and the next 14 largest militaries in the world, and the U.S. military budget is roughly equal to the next 15 militaries in the world, which is like China and Germany and
Russia.
France and
mm-hmm.
Russia and England.
Allies, so.
And 12 of those are our allies.
Right.
Our.
Right.
I mean to say the United States' allies. Because mm-hmm. I kind of recently I've adopted this kind of radical idea that I am not the United States, that the United States is the United States.
Right.
So I'm trying to get more comfortable using terms like or pronouns like they.
Well, but you have a passport, don't you?
I do, and
what,
I'm
what
waiting.
Color
to,
is it?
It's blue, and
does
I'm
it
waiting
say
to
United
get.
States on it,
it does, and I want to get a Hawaiian national passport, but I don't think they have one yet.
I don't believe so. But so as a, I have a passport too. It's also blue. It also says United States,
and it's got like an RFID chip in there.
Yeah.
I never asked to be an American.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, so you've got bases all over, and there's concern from some quarters, as we were just talking about, that there are not enough bases. And
what
that
do
we
they
need?
Need
a stronger military.
For what?
Depends who you ask. I mean, some people say it's, to provide, a security and safety, and it's to prevent bad things happening by bad actors. For example, in Okinawa, there are about 32 bases. So I think the concerns
there. This is like
there,
Air Force bases and naval bases.
Yeah, Marines make the U.S. Marines make the bulk, but there's also Kadena Air Force Base, which is huge, and it's a major Air Force base. But the Marines make up the bulk of it, and so the Marines will be in Okinawa, for example, and then they'll, depending on what's happening, they'll be sent to various places when there are crisis and contingency is the term that's often used. For example, let's say there's a war in Iraq.
Which there was.
Yeah.
Which
or,
there still is, actually.
Or Afghanistan.
Which there was.
Or like a long time ago, Vietnam.
Which, yeah.
For
decades.
If you have soldiers and you have military hardware in a place like Okinawa, you're that much closer.
Mm.
And so you can get those people there faster. Now, some people say that's not necessary today.
Well, but I am given to understand by people who know more a lot more about this than I do that this is called a forward power
mm-hmm.
projection.
Exactly. Yeah.
So maybe you could explain, because I don't really quite understand what is forward power projection.
Well, just this goes back, you know, quite a ways. I'm sure you've read quite a bit of history, and you probably remember back in the 19th century. You've heard of Commodore Matthew Perry?
Matthew Perry, yeah. Uh-huh. He had the black ships.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
He went on a steam navigation trip around the world or something.
Right, right. And he landed in Okinawa, as it turns out, in 1853, I believe it was. And when he arrived there in 1853, he was so impressed with the location of these islands. They pronounced it Luchu or Ryukyu, which is the old name of the kingdom, Ryukyu. But Luchu, he was so impressed with this, he went back to the United States and he said, hey, there are these islands called Luchu. Oh, the name Okinawa was not being used at that point.
Okay.
And he said, this is something that the United States needs to get their hands on.
Wait, he was so impressed by it, he wanted to take it.
To possess it.
Oh, that's...
For the United States. Huh. So this whole idea of forward projection is nothing new. So at the time, the Congress wasn't, you know, they weren't convinced.
They were as backward thinking then as they are now. Maybe less.
Yeah.
It's hard to run an empire when you just don't see the big picture.
We didn't want Alaska either in the beginning. So, anyways, they did not see the need to have Okinawa at that time. And then, if we go forward a few years to the early 20th century, to around 1901 or 19,
with Teddy Roosevelt,
exactly,
and
Teddy
the Great
Roosevelt.
The White Fleet. The ships aren't black anymore. Suddenly, they're white.
Yeah. Well, you know, times change.
Yeah.
So, big stick. I think when he was governor, before he was president, he was talking about the need for American power in the Pacific.
He was a big blusterer like that.
Yeah, yeah.
He loved ships.
Yeah.
The bigger, the better, the more. Yeah,
and sticks, too.
Yeah. And then I guess he was governor of New York.
New York, correct.
And then he became the Secretary of the Navy, I think under the, what administration was that?
Help me.
One of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think actually this is around the same time that the U.S. picked a fight with Spain,
mm-hmm.
and went to war with them,
right.
and seized Puerto Rico,
mm-hmm.
and Cuba,
mm-hmm.
and they thought they wanted to get the Philippines as well,
right.
and then on the way, without it telling anybody, they just sort of took Hawaii as well, which is kind of weird. I always thought.
Islands, yeah.
I thought it would be like a good coal refueling station.
Right.
But it's weird because Hawaii wasn't at war with anybody. Spain and the U.S. were.
Right.
And, you know, when Germany wanted to invade France and they went through Belgium, which is like a neutral country, but it was on the way, everybody was upset about that. They're like, that was outrageous. But that's exactly what the U.S. did with Hawaii on the way to the Far East.
Guess what happened on my way to the Far East?
Honey, I took the islands.
Yeah. So anyway, so this whole idea of getting bases into the Pacific and having our, you know, our position in Asia and the Pacific is really nothing new.
But when you say our, you don't mean yours.
I don't mean yours.
You don't mean mine.
I don't mean mine.
All right, because I get confused.
United States.
Yeah. All right.
And then, of course, you know, if we jump ahead, I mean, we could spend all day on this, but 2011, President Obama announces the Asia Pacific pivot, or the so-called rebalance, where we're gonna you know, these wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, at least for the U.S. fighting forces, are winding down.
They were sucking up a lot of attention.
Yeah. So we said, okay, we're stepping back from that. We've done our business there, and now we're going to go do our business somewhere else. And so Asia Pacific, you know, China, North Korea, of course, Russia is in Asia. You've got all these big forces and lots of money and lots of economic power happening. We want a slice of the action.
Well, if you're just joining us, we're talking with journalist John Lettman, the Kauai resident. He's been writing, doing independent freelance journalism for the last 15 more years. We're going to take a little musical break and kind of clear our mental palates. And we'll be right back with more Out of the Box on KKCR, the station that loves you.
Okay, this looks great. What's next?
Well, Mr. Baker, how much risk are you willing to take with your financial future?
Okay. Rape me. Rape me, my friend. Rape me. Rape me.
Just joining us, you are tuned into KKCR. You found us somewhere on the dial, perhaps at 91.9 90.9 92.7 104.1, over on Oahu. We're coming out loud and clear on many different frequencies, and thank you so much for finding us this afternoon. My name is Jonathan Jay, host of the show here with Out of the Box, and new addition to the team, Dano. And we're speaking with journalist John Lettman, who's just come back from a trip to Okinawa. And we're talking about sort of Okinawa, where its place in the Pacific, its place in history, and kind of getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, because we're going to talk more about the U.S. military bases that are there now and what the present situation is. But we don't want to gloss over the Battle of Okinawa, because that was a great, big, huge, terrible thing that happened
right.
The winding down days.
Exactly. From April 1st, I believe, is when it began, the Battle of Okinawa. The Okinawan name for it was a typhoon of steel, if you can imagine. And if you've seen, a typhoon of steel, if you can imagine, you know, dozens of
wave after wave
of big military ships off the coast firing, you know, big rounds onto the island, and then swarms of soldiers, U.S. soldiers, coming in before going to the mainland of Japan and coming into the island and just fighting with the Japanese soldiers.
Who were dug in. And
exactly. And then the Okinawan people, who, of course, are...
It's stuck in the middle of this gigantic battle.
Right,
like, hey,
right.
You know what? Can you guys not be blowing everything up?
Yeah. And so that's, I think, an important part of history to keep in mind when you consider the present situation and the sentiment of people, why they feel the way they do and the experiences they had, and this concept of Nuchidu Takara, this life is precious, we talked about earlier, because they've seen what happens when you lose life and how it could be a very painful experience. War is hell, people say it. And I think
for good reason.
Yeah. I forget the numbers, but of all the peace museums in the world, a large number of them are in Japan, and a large number of those, or a significant number of those, are in Okinawa.
How did the Japanese get to Okinawa?
Well, they just turned left, and it's right down there. It's just...
This is part of their whole military expansion, or was that part of the run-up to World War II, or...
By that point...
Part of the Japanese co-prosperity sphere?
Right, well, we mentioned earlier in the 1870s, through a series of events, Okinawa had become annexed or taken into Japan, and the name Ryukyu Kingdom was no longer being used.
So they were occupied.
Yeah, again, it depends who you ask, but yeah, I think...
I would ask the Okinawans.
That would be a good group of people to ask.
The Japanese might say, oh, no, we didn't do that, but that's what occupiers always say.
Right. So by that point, yeah, Okinawa was already part of Japanese, the nation state of Japan.
Imperial Japan.
Exactly. And so when you have these Japanese soldiers fighting the American soldiers and the Okinawan civilians in the middle, really horrible things happen. I want to direct your attention to an excellent book called Resistant Islands.
Resistant Islands. And who wrote that?
Yeah, Resistant, as in resist.
Right.
Islands. Okinawa, and I believe it's Okinawa confronts Japan and the U.S.
Right, because they never asked for either of these two nations to be there.
When you have big powers fighting, somebody in the middle is going to get hurt.
I think that's what the Koreans say.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't want to be between two whales battling.
Right, exactly. They're different metaphors. But yeah, it's the same concept. And so if you go to these peace museums, I went to the first day I was there in June of this year for about a week. And the first thing I did after getting out of the airport was I met a wonderful man named Yoshikazu Makishi. He's a well-known architect, and he's also an anti-base activist. And
what is an anti-base? I know what an architect is. What's an anti-base activist?
You're familiar with military bases like we're talking about, right?
You know, I'm not as familiar with them perhaps as the Okinawans.
Yeah, they're really familiar with them. So people who don't like these bases or don't want them in their islands are called anti-base activists.
And what percentage of the Okinawan population would really like the military bases to not be there?
Good question. It depends on who you ask and depends on the polls you cite. I mean, my impression from what I've read, what I've seen, what I've heard, what I've experienced firsthand is a lot of people. I didn't run into a lot of people who were really pro-military base, although they certainly exist. And I did see a few, and I've seen them on television or YouTube, and I know they exist, and there are people for various reasons who support these bases.
I'm sure it's the economic benefit to certain people.
Certainly, I'm sure the people who build fences.
Right.
Because there are a lot of fences there.
That's right, the concertina thing. Wire manufacturers.
Yeah, construction, a lot of awards to be granted, a lot of contracts to be awarded and so forth. People who have businesses, just like you see in Hawaii, people who have businesses that do... They work directly with service members. They see a direct benefit. But then there are other people who question that and say, well, is the benefit really as good as it's made out to be? But anyway, this fellow, Yoshikazu Makishi, he's the architect, he accompanied me to two peace museums in the southern part of the island. And these are very, very sobering places. They're very important places to see, I think, when you visit a place like Okinawa, just like you'd probably want to go to, Iolani Palace on Oahu, and you want to see certain places, or, there are things in Hawaii that you'd want to see to better understand the history. And in Okinawa, too, to understand the history of what people experienced in the not-too-distant past, 70 years ago.
Living memory.
Exactly. A lot of the older folks in Okinawa who are in their 70s or above, if you're 70 or older... You were alive during the Battle of Okinawa.
So how many people didn't make it through the Battle of Okinawa?
The numbers vary, but I think it's between a third to a quarter of the population. A lot of people.
So were there like a million people then? So that would be like a couple hundred thousand?
I don't know what the population was at that point, but we're talking over 100,000 people. We're talking a lot of people.
So that would be like... The entire island and a half of Kauai.
Yeah,
that's a lot of
death, a lot of suffering, a lot of really horrific experiences. So back to the book I mentioned earlier, Resistant Islands. Okinawa stands up to Japan and the U.S.
And who wrote that?
A woman who's in Vancouver, Canada, named Satoko Norimatsu. Satoko Norimatsu, Japanese lady
with an N.
And then a Australian scholar who's a Japanese. Japan and Okinawa specialist named Gavin McCormick. Gavin, G-A-V-A-N, McCormick. You can find it easily on the interwebs. They wrote this book, and this is a great book if you really want to have a better understanding of the history, what took place, and a lot of things that you don't see in the media, things that just it doesn't make the news.
Hmm.
But it gives, I read that, and that was kind of a driving force for me after reading this, say, I want to see this place for myself. And
that's what piqued your interest.
Not only that, but yeah, that was after I read this book, and I said, you know, I want to see this for myself. I'm hearing this, I hear that. Seeing is believing, right?
That's what they say in Missouri. what did you read in the book Resistant Islands that really kind of captured your?
Well, there's some really detailed and graphic accounts of the kind of suffering people experienced during the Battle of Okinawa, and not so much the suffering of the soldiers, which no doubt they suffered. There was a lot of death on all sides, but the suffering of ordinary people, women, children, men, old folks, young folks, you name it, just regular old folks, and the things that they experience. And we're talking of just horrific things, forced suicides, deaths in caves, dying of starvation, dying of, you know, just the worst imaginable things. And so those people who survived, and many of those who survived, and I met some of those folks, a lot of them, those that are still alive today, obviously were young children, you know, just
like
three,
eight,
four,
five, eight, nine.
Little kids,
yeah.
Little kids.
That's
their
heavy.
Families,
that's so heavy.
Their families, you know, sought refuge in the north of the island.
The mountainous jungles.
Was largely spared from the worst carnage, which is in the south. And so those people grew up remembering that, you know, obviously after a war, there had been all this horrific death and destruction, but then there was this grinding poverty. And then you have the victorious power, which is the United States, coming in and saying, well, we're going to set up shop. There was a YouTube video, which I mentioned earlier. It was called Keystone of the Pacific. If you search YouTube, Keystone of the Pacific, and I believe that the series was called The Big Picture. This is a 1950s U.S. Army propaganda film, and there's no other way to describe it.
You could call it Milprop.
Milprop.
That's what they would call it, right?
Yeah. It's a 1950, I think it was produced in 1953, based on what the narrator says. Army propaganda film. It's about 55 minutes long, and if you watch that, you'll come away with a really good understanding of recent history of Okinawa.
Hmm.
What's the relationship between Okinawa and China?
Today or in the past?
Today.
Today, I'd say it's a good relationship, and one thing that was really interesting was that for hundreds of years, Okinawa and China had a really good relationship. A lot of trade was going on, and today that continues. There are a lot of Chinese tourists, there are a lot of Chinese students, there are a lot of Chinese business people, and so some of the concerns or the uncertainties or the fears that you might find in mainland Japan that are directed towards China, I didn't hear that when I was in Okinawa. I think there's a lot more openness towards China.
So there's a good relationship.
Yeah, I think in general. And when I ask people, because this is what's a commonly cited reason for having a high military buildup in Okinawa, is that, oh, China is a threat, China is this, China is that. And when I ask people in Okinawa, aren't you worried about China? Aren't you worried they'll invade? People were almost to a person saying, no, I'm not worried about China. We have a long, amiable history with China.
For thousands of years?
I don't know about thousands, but certainly for hundreds of years. And, you know, they say, what about China invading? They say, invading? They're already here. They're at Starbucks.
Well, they used to.
They're at the hotel. They're in our universities. They're doing business with us.
A U.S. Defense Department official says the new pivot strategy. The Pentagon said it would continue ignoring Beijing's claims that reclaim the land in the South China Sea. Basically, they want to continue a weapons buildup against China. And my understanding is China and Okinawa are allies. Does that cause concern for the Okinawans?
That's a great question, and we're going to come back to that after a little music break and some top-of-the-hour stuff. You're listening to Out of the Box on KKCR, the station that loves you. We'll be right back with our top-of-the-hour and our underwriters. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. And we're going to come back and we're going to explore exactly what is this pivot. That's a fantastic question. Thanks for joining us this afternoon here on Out of the Box on KKCR, Kauai Community Radio, the station that loves you. And we want to thank you so much for your love from listeners just like you, as well as these fine underwriters. These ones.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO Free Kauai, agricultural biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama Aina.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Kevin Bako, MD of Hawaii Compassionate Care, offers medical marijuana certification exams at his office in Kapa'a. Information and appointments available at 808-854-6335 or online at hawaiicompassionatecare.com.
Thank you so much to Hawaii Life, the Tahiti Nui, Compassionate Care, and people just like you, because you not only help us survive, when you make an investment in community radio, you are making an investment in your community. So thank you so much for that. Deeply appreciate that. A lot of people have worked really hard over the last decades, and we're still going strong, and we owe it to people like you. So thank you so much. And you'll have a chance to step up and do your part even that much more in a couple weeks. We got the pledge drive coming up. Pretty exciting time of year when we do that. It's a lot of activity at the station. This is good to know, too.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Haleiwa.
So we've got a caller on the line right now. I believe it's Ray Catania. I made a little appointment to call in at the top of the hour here. It's just after 5 o'clock right now. Thanks for sharing your afternoon with us. Ray, is that Ray on the phone? All right, fantastic. Let me get him up. Push the button. I'm here. Aloha, caller. You're on the air. I think. And how about now? Yeah, I've got the phone on. Should be good. Can you hear me, Ray? You might want to turn your radio down. How about now?
Hello.
Hello. Aloha, caller.
Aloha. Jonathan, thank you so much. This is Catherine Music. I'm delighted that you have John Lettman on your show. I wanted to make a comment because I lived 11 years in Okinawa.
Okay. Did you have a quick comment? Because we want to try and get
three quick comments. One is
three.
It's 250 million years old. It's not volcanic. It's calcium carbonate, also known as karst.
Karst. So it's a karst topography. I knew it was something when he talked about the limestone caves.
And it's also The word mensore means welcome. It's kind of like aloha.
Mensore.
Okay. Another comment is the Okinawans are very angry about the American military presence. So the North was not spared. My neighbors in Yambaru, where I lived for 11 years, were pathetically upset about the American presence before, during, and after the war. They destroyed the fields. I mean, it's awful. So another was, 80% of the Okinawans are against the military presence there. They voted. The governor is going to the United Nations next week. He just confronted the Pentagon and Abe. He's a very strong, important man, and he deserves all our respect. And the last was Antarctica, where I was in 1974.
Are there U.S. military bases there?
There is. On McMurdo, they're in
1974. You know, they're everywhere.
Yeah, there were 900 troops there when I was there in 1974, so it's only gotten bigger.
Do they have any on Mars? Like, where does the U.S. military not have a base?
We're sending those up there. So the reason to call is that I'm just delighted because this is a very important moment. The Okinawans have been suffering since the war by the American military takeover, and a lot of their nature has been destroyed. And so after introducing both Iha and Makshi to John, whom I've known those guys since 1981. So these are friends from almost 35 years ago. And they were so happy that John came, and they showed him the island, and he was able to appreciate something that most people do not know about their own island, you know. So thank you, John, for being there, and thank you, Jonathan, for having John there. And let's wish our governor of Okinawa all the power he needs to win this confrontation.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. Really appreciate that. And do we have Ray Catania standing by still? No. Ray, try call back quick. I know Ray is working on the Fight for 15. Wanted to get a little update about that. You know, these things matter. Quality of life everywhere. Wherever you are, that's where you got to fight the good fight. Or maybe we could all just stop fighting. Something to think about. While we're waiting for Ray to call back, we were talking earlier. Dana, you raised a really good question, kind of bringing us into the present tense with the Asia-Pacific pivot and the U.S. effort to rebalance its forces in the region to counter a rising China.
Yeah, this is from defense.com. It's a quote from a U.S. Defense Department official saying, the U.S. will continue sending new weapons and equipment to the Asia-Pacific region to counter China, U.S. Defense Department officials say. And in a new strategy document, the Pentagon said it will continue ignoring Beijing's claims that reclaimed lands in the South China Sea constituted sovereign territory.
I hope so.
There you go. So, I think that you hear this again and again and again, that China's a threat and North Korea's a threat, and so we need to be present. And so that's one of the driving forces behind this large military buildup that is showing no sign of letting up. But as we started to talk about earlier, there is a difference in the perception, I think, of people in Okinawa versus people in Japan regarding China. And there is this long history of trade between China and Okinawa. And so from what I saw and what I've read, there's not this heightened level of fear or suspicion. And there's, we talked earlier about this video called The Keystone of the Pacific, which I recommend people take a look at to see the kind of the army propaganda that was being produced in the 1950s. Whereas today, if you go to one of the main peace museums, in fact, the premier peace museum in Okinawa, there's a display where they show the position of Okinawa, and they say, we don't want to be a keystone of the Pacific. We want to be a cornerstone of peace. And that's the idea that Okinawa can play a different role rather than being a highly hyper-militarized place that's preparing for possible war with whoever it might be, China or North Korea.
Well, but it's not them. They're not preparing for war. It's the U.S.,
right,
so like they're sucked in to somebody else's fight.
Yeah, but they're saying we don't want to play that role. We don't want to, just like they didn't want to be the place that's sending military personnel and weapons to Vietnam or to Iraq or to Afghanistan or to Korea.
Or to any place else in the world that they're not at war with.
Right, all right. but rather to have this role of being a cornerstone of peace, where you have a place where people from different countries and different cultures can come together and engage in business and discussion, education, tourism, trade, and whatnot, and, you know, operate in a mutually respectful manner, as opposed to one based on fear and threat and control.
And force.
And they announce it beforehand. If you look at the project for the New American Century, there's a clip that's been played many times with General Wesley Clark from 2007 announcing there was a report from Dick Cheney saying in the next 7 years we are going to destroy governments in seven countries in, 5 years. We're going to start with Iraq, and then we're going to move on to Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran.
Mm-hmm. So they're kind of going through their little checklist, like a to-do list there. Because Syria, wow, what a mess.
Right.
Libya, what a mess.
Well, what did in the first GOP debate, which was a few weeks back, hosted by Fox News, Mike Huckabee, the former governor of Arkansas, very in a moment of kind of striking candor, said the purpose of the military is to kill people and break things. Now, when I was in Okinawa and I met with military folks that were very gracious with their time and showed me around, they didn't say to me the purpose of our organization is to kill people and break things.
But these are the U.S. military personnel, right? What did they say their purpose was?
They said,
was?
Well, there was not talk of killing people and breaking things.
That's
not
pretty much what they do.
Well, that's not what they were talking about. They were talking about helping people and humanitarian aid and disaster relief. And they went to great lengths to talk about the various ways they help people and why their role and their presence in Okinawa is so important in helping, for example, a typhoon in Taiwan, in the Philippines, or an earthquake in Nepal, saying how we have this, you may have heard of the MV-22 Osprey.
That's a airplane that looks like an egg beater.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of egg beater you have, but yeah, it's
a really big one.
It's a hybrid. It's made by Bell Boeing, and it's a hybrid aircraft where it takes off like a helicopter, and it lands like a helicopter, but it can fly. It has tilt rotary.
It's like a transformer.
Exactly, and it can tilt its
propellers,
and it can fly at great lengths and great speeds like an airplane. So a cross between an airplane and a helicopter. That's the Osprey. And there are two squadrons of those on Okinawa.
Hmm.
And we have some in Hawaii, too. You might remember one crash.
You and I do?
The U.S. military.
Oh, those guys. Yeah. Okay.
There's one that crashed. You remember it? I think it was around May, like the beginning or the end of May. An Osprey crashed over near Kaneohe.
Over on Big Island?
Yeah. No.
Oh, no. Oahu. Okay.
And unfortunately, two U.S. Marines died.
That's terrible.
And the people who live in the area were, you know, I think, understandably alarmed, just as the people of Okinawa are understandably alarmed. They've got a huge number of military aircraft flying over their heads day and night.
In a very, very, very high-density urban population,
exactly,
where more than a million people live on less than half of the area of Kauai.
It's about 80%. It's about 20% smaller than Kauai.
Yeah, but you said all the north is wild. Nobody lives there. Most of the population lives in less than half the island. So
it's a high. Exactly your point. Yeah. It's a lot of people in a very small space, and lots of activity, military aircraft flying around, and it is a concern for those folks.
Well, I don't want to discount any of the good things that the U.S. military does in terms of humanitarian relief or disaster aid, but I question what percentage of their overall budget is dedicated to those kinds of things. Is it 2%? Is it 0.4%?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is it less?
I don't know what it is. I was given a number of rather slickly produced kind of graphic flyers that talk about all the things that they're doing that are right. But, yeah, like you said, that's really not what they're there for.
I'm not saying they're not doing that. I'm sure everything what they told you is accurate and true. I just wonder what percentage of the big picture that represents.
Yeah, that's it's a good point, and it's an important consideration. So anyway, when I was there, these are the things that were I was being told about by the military folks.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of the big picture, and then we'll come back with, I believe we've got Ray Catania on the phones, and we'll be right back. Thanks for tuning in to Out of the Box, and here's a little bit of some of that mil prop, that early U.S. military propaganda from the Cold, Cold War. Can you...
Today, the latest weapons, coupled with the fighting skill of the American soldier, stand ready, on the alert all over the world to defend this country, you, the American people, against aggression. This is The Big Picture, an official television report to the nation from the United States Army. Now, to show you part of The Big Picture, here is Sergeant Stuart Queen.
The film you are about to see was produced as a troop information film, specially prepared to alert the American soldier against a hidden enemy, an enemy that can destroy morale, rob the soldier of the will to fight, and even trick him into surrendering. Enemy propaganda. Although this study of communist deception was made for a military audience, we think that you, the American public, will also find it pertinent and enlightening.
I am terrified by enemy propaganda because that's like the worst kind of propaganda there is. And, you know, it's I'm so heartened and relieved and set at ease when I can listen to American propaganda because it's all about truth and justice. And I guess it's the American way.
I don't know, huh? I've written stories that have been called enemy propaganda in those terms.
So, but propaganda is concocted information designed to conceal or create a false impression.
Mm-hmm.
But you cite your sources.
Yeah, well, you know, some people don't like being criticized and don't like the facts when they're presented.
Well,
for what they are.
If you don't like the facts, you got to do something about the facts. Because I think Ronald Reagan once famously said, facts are stubborn things.
Yeah, well, a lot of things that Reagan said are long forgotten.
Oh, he said a lot of good things. He said trust but verify.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my approach to U.S. propaganda. You know, I trust the U.S., I like to verify as well because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm kind of a Reaganite in that regard.
I see. I wouldn't have guessed that.
I'm a social conservative.
You never know.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Left, right, straight, up, right, down. Many, 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 many parts to the quilt.
Right, right. That's good. Good to know. So, yeah. So, anyway, this whole situation with Okinawa as Catherine Music, which you called in earlier, and I have to thank her for the wonderful introduction she gave me to those fine folks in Okinawa. She pointed out there's a lot of anger in Okinawa now, and that was one of the driving forces for me to go over there to see for myself what I'd been reading about and what is driving this anger and what are people doing about it.
Yeah, are they just so beside themselves that they are livid, or are they grounded and responding to specific mm-hmm. things with alternative proposals and, you know, I guess clearly articulated requests that something else happen? I mean, because this stuff can make you angry.
Yeah, I think there's a mix, just as you would expect anywhere. There's a mix of all that and more. You've got all kinds of reactions from different people. But what you have are very active, ongoing, and I mean every single day, protests in certain areas, not only one spot, multiple spots around the island of Okinawa, of people who are saying enough. I think Catherine said 80% of the people are opposed to the bases.
Well, evidently enough people are opposed to the bases to elect a mayor who's
a governor. And a mayor.
And a mayor. So they are some kind of majoritarian position.
Yeah. Governor Takeshi Onaga was elected last November.
And what was his platform?
His platform was anti-base. He was specifically, there's a base, a large Marine Corps air station called Futenma. You may have heard of it. It's in the southern part of the island. It's in the middle of a big city called Ginawan. And it's been famously called or referred to as the world's most dangerous base.
And why is that?
That's because you've got so many different aircraft flying in and out of the base day after day, week after week. And you've had, for example, a number of crashes, not only from that base itself, but other places. But famously in 2004, in August of 2004, a helicopter flying near and from Futenma crashed in a university. Okinawa International University. I was taken to this spot to see where the plane where the helicopter crashed, and miraculously nobody was killed, and that's because it was summer vacation, it was summer holiday, so students were out. But it was right in the middle. Imagine if a plane crashed in the middle of Waikiki or Bishop Street in Honolulu. That would,
that would be a disaster.
It'd be a disaster.
Yeah.
And so
I'm thinking it'd be even worse if one crashed in Wailua homesteads, because that's where I live.
Yeah, it would be bad wherever it crashed. And so people are saying, we want this closed. And so after a number of events, most famously there was a horrific a rape of a young girl, a 12-year-old girl, by three U.S. service members in 1995. And that left people obviously just outraged. After this terrible event, there was a big push to get this base closed, this Futenma base closed. And then there was a proposal to either move the base somewhere else in Okinawa, or some people said it should be moved somewhere else in Japan. Some people said it should be moved outside of Japan. But currently the plan stands, and it goes back to the 60s, that the base will be relocated or rebuilt in a less populated part of the island, which is called Henoko.
Hmm. Well, airplane crashes, certainly nobody does that on purpose, and that's, that's an accident, and accidents happen. But I guess if there's thousands and thousands and thousands of military air flights overhead over dense urban populations,
bad things happen.
It's going to happen. And so that's a tragedy, but it's also, it's like a certainty, because you have enough air overflights, eventually that's going to happen. Sexual assault and rape, that's not really an accident. That's a crime. That's a crime. That's criminal behavior.
It's a deliberate crime, yeah.
And was this, this sounds like a specifically horrific event, but I know the U.S. military has a troubling record with sexual assault with civilians inside the military, men against women, men against men. It just seems like there's a lot of sexual aggression, and that's not terribly surprising, because you have a population of people who are trained to be aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't think that they are bad people. I just think that you have a highly militarized environment.
Right.
So, but that's not just an isolated event. That's a systemic issue.
Yeah, all of these, you can go and look it up for yourself. There are many, many incidents of whether it's sexual violence or crimes or traffic accidents or crashes or pollution or contamination or just the mundane, noise and on and on and on of things that people in Okinawa are dealing with day after day, decade after decade. 70 years later, people have had enough. And now you've got this push to move this new base, or to build the new base in this place called Henoko in the north, in sparsely populated north, where you've got incredible biodiversity. Beautiful. It's a beautiful bay. I was out there one day on a boat with a photographer and a diver. It took me and showed me around. And that's going, their plan is to dump, it's 21 million cubic meters.
What does that number even mean?
It's a huge amount of dirt and sand.
They're going to fill in the whole bay? Or?
Not the whole bay.
Oh, just most of the
make
bay?
Make an island.
Okay.
You know how there's talk of like China building artificial islands in the South China Sea?
I don't know about that. I know that they're doing that in the United Arab Emirates or in Qatar. They're making like pleasure fantasy islands in the shape of coconut trees.
And this is a little different deal. But, yeah, it's the same idea that you take land from one place, like you take a mountain and you remove the mountain and you move the dirt and the sand from wherever it is, the mountain, and wherever it
you destroy the mountain.
Well, that's what you do. You reform it.
You reform it by, like, taking it away. Yeah.
And then you move it and you pour that into a bay.
Then
you do that, you change the entire dynamics of the bay. So all the animals and all the plants that live in that bay, and in this case, this bay is called Oura Bay. Oura.
And what does that mean? Do you know?
Oura is big. Bay. It's big. It's a big bay.
It's about to get smaller.
It's going to get smaller. If they build it. Now there's opposition day after day. It's been going on for years to building this new base at Henoko. Now the official name for this new base is the Futema Replacement Facility.
FRF. FRF. Okay.
Yeah. But everybody just calls it Henoko. If you just search on the internet, Henoko, H-E-N-O-K-O, you'll find lots of information. So the idea is that they expand one existing base called Camp Schwab, and they build this artificial island, and then they can move some of the operations from Futema, which is in the crowded part of the island, to the less crowded part of the island. And so that's the proposed solution.
So... But they're not moving the military base off the island. Well, technically, I guess they are because they're making. Well, but that's kind of a.
It's like imagine if you took Hanalei Bay. You're familiar with Hanalei Bay. It's. Right
it's beautiful.
There. It's right there. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Imagine if Japan was building a base in Hanalei Bay, and let's say they wanted to occupy 20% of Kauai, to help us with our security, because we had a hostile neighbor.
Somewhere,
or a perceived hostile neighbor. And so they said, well, we're going to take this bay called Hanalei Bay, and we're going to build an artificial island, and we're going to put in. And this is all for your interest. And so you can imagine people on Kauai probably wouldn't like that.
I don't know if everybody would see it that way here.
I don't know if everybody would be on board.
If you're just joining us, you've got it tuned to KKCR. This is Out of the Box. This is a community affairs show. We've been talking with journalist John Lettman about Okinawa, and... What we haven't done a very good job of on the show so far is putting out the phone number, which is 826-7771, and inviting you, the listener, to join in the conversation if you have comments or questions. So I apologize for that. We've got half an hour left in the show. We want to get as many people on as possible now. The phone is malfunctioning. Well... Let's maybe take a little break, go to some music, see what we can figure out. You get attuned to KKCR, Out of the Box, station that loves you.
We're sitting on the porch drinking beer at night. I think it was summertime or something. I asked him a question.
Sometimes you think, what the hell are we doing here, right? I'm watching my friends die.
And he just said, that's dead. So that line. So that'd be.
Weird experience, okay? And a sad experience. And I just hope nobody else has to go through it.
Thank you.
you're just tuning in, you've got it pegged to 91.9 FM. KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, coming at you live from the Moku of Halelea on the north shore of Manokalanipo, beautiful island of Kauai. I want to let folks know that Ashley Lukens is going to be on island next week from the Center for Food Safety. She's going to be doing a presentation about pesticides in Hawaii. She'll be at the Waimea Neighborhood Center on September 21st from 6 to 8 p.m. And then again the next evening on the 22nd at King Kamu Ali'i School. I think that's in Hanapepe, yeah? No? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
That's near Hanama'u. That's in Hanama'ulu.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. That's okay. It's on the way into
town.
Yeah. Okay. Super. Yeah. So yeah, Ashley Lukens from the Center of Food Safety is going to be doing a presentation on pesticides in Hawaii. That's going to be at the Waimea Neighborhood Center on the 21st from 6 to 8 p.m. and then at King Kaumualii in Lihue, Hanama'ulu, and the next evening, same time, September 22nd, 6 to 8 p.m. Have we got our phones all straightened out? You're awesome. Do we want to go to a caller? All right, fantastic. That button, this button, aloha caller, I think you're on the air.
Aloha, this is Nuchi Du Takara, and hi, Sai and Mensore, Catherine. I'm calling because it's hard to get your mind wrapped around the number of truckloads that are coming into that bay. 3.7 million truckloads, if you divide 3.7 times 10 to the 6 by 365 days a year, it's about 2 truckloads of fill per minute for 10 years. It's huge. It's unbelievable. So elsewhere is upset because Amami and Shikoku are going to be giving up their precious sediments, and they're going to bring in alien species to Okinawa. So we have both ends of the story. And then in the middle, I want to give a shout-out for Henoko Bay, the Ora one. Ura means behind. It's the old, the big behind, the bay behind that nobody was paying attention to. So there are 400 species of coral there. There are over 1,000 species of fish. The rivers have hundreds of species. We're talking about an island like Kauai where mostly if you go to a canal, there's tilapia, if anything. When I do my projects here in
Well, thank you so much for your call.
I have two species, but in this beautiful place, there are 400 species of coral.
That's a lot of coral. That's a tremendous amount of coral.
And to clobber them with 2 truckloads per minute for 10 years is nonsense. And unfortunately, it's not just the American military base. What's going to happen is it's going to be too small for the American military, and so it'll become like a self-defense base.
Well, thank you so much for weighing in. We really appreciate your call. It's all about the community. This is your station. I believe we have another call. Thank you for calling, caller.
Aloha, caller. You're on the air. Thanks for waiting patiently. And the number is 826-7771. Try and make your comment or your question brief so we can get as many callers on the phone as and on the air as possible. So, aloha, caller. You're on the air. Can you hear us, caller? All right, we're going to go to the next caller. Phone lines are open. 826-7771. So as we come into the last 20 minutes of the show, where are we today with Okinawa? I mean, the last caller was talking about,
right.
She was giving some details about some of the specifics of the environmental.
Exactly. She was talking about the negative impacts of having this huge amount of sand and silt that's brought from other places.
21 million cubic.
It's a huge amount.
I don't even know what that means.
It's a lot. And so there was a permit granted by the previous governor to a,
who got voted out.
It was voted out.
By the new governor who's like, we don't want the base.
It was voted out by the people of Okinawa who wanted the current governor, Onaga, to come in, who said, I'm going to stand up and say no to building this new base at Henoko. And as the caller was saying, if all this dirt goes into the bay, it's going to destroy the biodiversity, the rich coral and the fish that she was talking about.
Well, the living vitality of the place.
Exactly. So just in the last couple of days, the current governor, his name is Onaga, he announced that he's rescinding the permit, which means we're set up for probably what's going to be a long, protracted court battle between the Okinawan prefectural government and the Japanese government.
So, yeah, I mean, is it similar in the U.S. where you have, like, the state Supreme Court and then are the federal Japanese going to come in and overrule?
This is going to go to the courts and it could be decided there, but it's probably going to take a while. But it's going to add time, obviously, to this process, to building a new base. It's going to add expense, and it's going to complicate. You've probably been following the news.
Actually, you know what, John? I make a point not to follow the news.
Oh, you should follow. It's interesting.
But, you know, I don't, because I don't want my head to be polluted with so much white noise. I can't – if I'm following the news too closely – I can't think about it.
If you squint your eyes, you can see through that white noise. Squint your ears. I'm sure you can do that.
You can make out the general.
Exactly. Okay. You can see what's happening.
That's a helpful technique.
So
I'm doing a lot of squinting.
There have been huge protests in Japan as well as Okinawa, but the protests in Japan have been focused on changes that the Abe government, who's the current prime minister of Japan, is making to make changes to the so-called peace constitution that forbids Japanese military forces from fighting.
As I understand it, he's trying to eliminate the peace part of the Constitution so that Japan can remilitarize and act in concert with their allies.
Right. Namely the United States.
Namely the United States, right. to increase their military presence in the region.
Right, and perhaps outside of the region. So there have been massive demonstrations, and these are ongoing, and this is in a place where you know, a lot of people haven't been demonstrating against this type of thing for a long time, but because it's reached the point it has, the demonstrations have become quite heated. There's actually been fighting on the floor of the Japanese Diet, the parliament in Japan. You can see just in the last day or two, lawmakers, I believe, are going at it.
So this is something that's blowing up right now.
This is very heated. So on top of all this, you have this battle in Okinawa regarding this new base. And so adding time and money to this complicates the matters. Meanwhile, you have the United States, various forces, including our members of Congress, and other members of Congress.
I didn't vote for them.
They're saying that this is the only solution, building this new base.
For the solution to what?
The solution to the problem or perceived problem is that Futenma, this air base in the south, is a very big, busy base, and it's perceived to be dangerous. Everybody agrees it's a potential great danger.
Because the facts demonstrate that.
Yeah.
Okay, this isn't like a hypothetical concern.
No. There have been crashes, there have been incidents, and people are aware of this. It's like if you had a big military base in Central Park, and you had these kind of, you know, fighter jets and Osprey flying in and out.
Sure, and fighter bombers and long-range striker brigades.
If one of these were to crash and so forth, and the noise that they present. So the idea is that the solution to that problem is to move the base to this new place, Ora Bay and Henoko, which we were talking about earlier.
But that's what the U.S. military's proposed solution to the problem is. It sounds like the Okinawans just want the base gone.
I think you've talked to most people. They say they want it gone. They don't want it rebuilt in somewhere else in Okinawa. They don't want to take a place that's been, from their perspective, befouled and destroyed and close it, and then to make a new place and take that new pristine place with this incredible biodiversity, the coral and the fish and so forth, and then befoul and destroy that.
Well, a question that rises to my mind, and maybe you have a question too, Dano, why can't the people in Okinawa control their own destiny?
Well, you've got some pretty big forces that are pushing pushing this on them. They're taking their best, making their best efforts to take things into their own hands. But when you've got these enormous forces coming at you, what are you going to do? You know, if you wake up one morning and you've got, you know, big trucks driving into your driveway saying, "Oh, we're going to build something here in your front yard," you know, what are you going to do? Sit in front and stop it? That's what they're doing.
That is what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, beyond that, the governor, Onaga, who's the current governor, he's going to Switzerland next week, I believe, to meet with the Human Rights Commission or Human Rights Panel and I think it's Geneva, to appeal to them. And he came, the same governor came to Hawaii in the end of May of this year, and he met with our, Senator Hirono, he met with Senator Brian Schatz, and he met with Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. He did not meet, as I understand it, with Congressman Mark Takai.
He's the junior congressman.
Correct. Okay. He met with the other three, and then he appealed to them and said, you know, hey, the people of Okinawa don't want this. We do not want this. Then he went on to fly to Washington, D.C., where he met with people there expressing the same sentiment. And what came back from the U.S. officials and came back from our representatives in Congress mentioned earlier was that, you know, thank you for expressing your opinions. We appreciate your input. But this is the only solution.
For them.
To build the base, yeah. And Ambassador Kennedy, Carolyn Kennedy, who's the U.S. ambassador to Japan, basically said the same thing. This is the only solution.
That's not the only solution, because the Okinawans have a perfectly valid solution that they presented, but
yeah,
they're
saying,
are they invisible? Are they inaudible? Why can't they be seen or heard?
That's just it. People aren't listening. I mean, you know, you've got big powers, you've got big plans, and sometimes it just doesn't fit in with what the people want.
And you're also referred to, you know, as we heard, you know, during the debate that you're an isolationist if you don't want U.S. bases built around the world. Did I hear you correctly earlier regarding the base that was promised to be moved? Was that promise originally made in 1960?
The plans to move the base go back to the 1960s. The original, you can find this.
I'm almost done.
Yeah.
I'll be right out.
Yeah, it goes back to the 1960s, and then it was kind of shelved, and it didn't really go forward. And then again, after this prominent rape case in 1995, when there was this just widespread extreme outrage against the U.S. military presence, that kind of pushed things forward to say, let's take care of this Futenma problem.
And I also heard that 80% opposed this. Who do you suppose the 20% are that
don't
support it?
Yeah. Well, and again, the numbers vary. I mean, it depends on what poll you're citing and who you're
80%,
asking.
80%, it could be like only 75%. That's three-quarters of the people.
The numbers, as I've seen it and as I've heard, are pretty overwhelmingly against this particular base. And in a broader context, all of these bases. Those who are not opposed, as we kind of talked about earlier, are people who have a financial stake, people who are maybe getting some kind of money from the government, people who
like
have a
bar
business.
Owners or?
Or people who have a business, people who are getting contracts, you know, being awarded contracts.
So their bread is getting buttered.
Exactly.
And I got a good friend of mine who's a neocon, and there's a great map on the internet that shows American flags representing where all our bases are around the world. And his contention was...
a lot of flags.
He goes, you know, I'll give you a good example. Benghazi, you know, we need bases so we have a fast response. And, I mean, what a horrible example. I mean, look what happened in Benghazi. Mm-hmm. I think it's about just dominating the world, creating a new world order, as some refer to it as. It's strange that people call Rand Paul an isolationist because he doesn't want to build military bases around the world.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he thinks that 800 is enough.
Yeah, or too much, too many. Yeah, you have to. I guess I think one thing that we have to ask ourselves as citizens of this country has this helped us in some way? Has this made us better, more secure? Look at your community, look at your neighbors, look at your workplace, look at the town you live in, look at the state you live in, look at the place you occupy yourself, and ask yourself, are we better off because of this? Are our kids better educated?
Well,
are we getting better healthcare?
Let's be honest. Military bases don't educate kids. I mean, you can make a good argument for having lots of military bases, and those arguments have been made, but they don't teach kids.
Unless you're going to school there.
Like Army bases don't treat the community's health needs. Army bases don't pave the roads. Army bases don't create affordable housing for the community unless they're barracks.
For the broader community, yeah.
I mean, how does an army base halfway across the world, 800 of them, protect us?
And from who?
Yeah, well, again, I met my last night in Okinawa, I went to a bar that was filled with mostly Marines. And I went in there to talk to them and to meet people and kind of hear from them, their perspective. And I sat at the bar with one. He was an amphibious reconnaissance specialist. He was a Marine. He was probably a little bit older. Maybe he was around 40 years old. He'd been in Okinawa a while.
So he was like an officer? Or?
I'm not sure what his title was, what his rank was. But he was a nice guy, and we had a good talk. And what he brought up to me, I explained what I was doing there and you know what I was trying to find out. And then I asked him in a very non-confrontational way, what do you think about the protesters, the people who are protesting this base in particular, Henoko? What do you think? And he said to me, quote, I get it. I get it. So he understood. He understands. And I think a lot of people who perhaps are in the military understand why. Just as if we say to you, if you're from Chicago or from Honolulu or from Tampa or from Seattle or from Dallas or wherever you might be.
Or from Kekaha.
Exactly. Do you want to have a foreign military base? And do you want to have this build up in your backyard? Probably not.
Well, it's already happening. I mean, if you look at the militarization of the police, police using stingrays to imitate cell phone towers to spy on U.S. citizens, the Snowden revelations. So all those folks that are in support of military bases around the world, they can rest assured that they're coming here. They are here.
Yeah.
And
I think that a lot of people don't really understand the scope and scale of what the military budget is inside what the federal government does. I mean, Eisenhower spoke 50, 60 years ago about a military-industrial complex. And, you know, you've got a sector of the federal government which is spending roughly $1 trillion a year. It's hard to know because not all the budgets are – some of them are gray and many of them are black.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a heck of a lot of money, and you just got to scratch your head and say, well, gosh, you know, what else could we be doing with $1 trillion? Maybe we could just spend a couple $100 billion each year. For example, a lot of people believe that the U.S. should have a strong defense, and I'm one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that every country in the world should be able to defend its people from hostile outward aggression.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have 800 bases around the entire world,
mm-hmm.
guess who you are?
Right.
You are the foreign military in 150 different countries.
Right.
And what I'm so curious about is, what is America so afraid of
mm-hmm.
that they feel they need this much military might?
Mm-hmm.
Their military budget is equal approximately to the entire rest of the world, which makes sense only if you're at war with the entire rest of the world, or you're afraid of the rest of the world. And Americans, my understanding of who Americans see themselves as is that they are honest, they are good, they are brave, they are patriotic. Many, many positive qualities. But what are they so afraid of that they feel they need so much defense, so much more defense than exists on the rest of the planet? What are they defending against?
And it's not the average American citizen that's afraid. These military bases make the average American citizen look bad. It's as if we all support it. It actually makes America weaker because, in a sense, that the whole world's going, wow, you know, America's just dominating the entire planet. I mean, how does that make America look good?
Right.
Anybody's eyes.
These are questions which were asked by an anthropologist you may have heard of named David Vine.
I just saw his name in an article recently.
Yeah, he's got a lot out right now. There was just an article in The Nation magazine just this week. He just published a book about 3 weeks ago called Base Nation. B-A-S-E Nation. Base Nation. And it's asking a lot of the questions that we're discussing here. how does this make us safer? How do these this network of bases around the world, does it make us safer? Does it harm us? What are the costs, not only to ourselves, not only to our military personnel and their families, to our economy, to our environment,
to our relations with other peoples in the world?
Exactly. All these questions are asked in his book, so that's something you might want to look into, Base Nation.
Well, that sounds very intriguing and very valuable, and that seems like a really important discussion that I don't see taking place in the, you know, the political leadership of America. Like, you know, the GOP debates, they all seem to be trying to outposition each other for who is the bigger hawk.
Exactly. I mean, if you saw, again, back to the GOP debate yesterday, Donald Trump was saying that we need to make the biggest military in the world. They all were saying that. And he was saying, I'm a very militaristic person with pride. Carly Fiorina saying that we need to upgrade all three legs of our nuclear triad. At the same time, we're so afraid of Iran uttering the word nuclear. We're talking about increasing, and we're already doing it. We're not just talking, we're doing it. We're spending $3 trillion.
Yeah, I've been looking a little bit, and maybe you have too, Dano, at the U.S. nuclear sub-budget. The U.S. and the Soviet Union was bogged down in, like, the Cold War for 60 years. Well, Soviet Union's no more. You know, Russia has become some kind of a neo-capitalist state, and, you know, they're interested in trade and economy and stuff. So all these missiles aren't supposed to be pointed at anybody else in the world. And I remember, maybe you do too, you know, there was talk when the Berlin Wall came down that, hey, you know what, we can finally step off of a war economy. There will be a peace dividend.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the peace dividend? Because all I've seen is more wars.
Well, there's not profit in peace.
Isn't there? I mean,
according to the military-industrial complex, the way they look at it, they're going to lose out. So there's far too much to be lost by the, you know, the folks in charge that are making money off all this new machinery, all this new technology. And I hear this argument a lot that, you know, if we didn't have such a military presence around the world, we'd be overtaken. But if you look at countries like Switzerland, and I can name a handful of them, we're limited on time.
Every other country in the world, basically.
Yeah, they don't have military bases everywhere. They're fine.
Right. I mean, you know, and people get all, you know, they get their panties in a bunch about Iran, but Iran hasn't invaded anybody. They haven't initiated a war with any other country for like the last 300 years.
More, yeah.
How many wars has the U.S. started in the last 30 years? Yeah. It's like, wow.
So for these situations, you have places like Okinawa where you really need, you know, to have this U.S. presence from the U.S. military perspective.
Well, if it was a U.S. presence, don't you think the Okinawans would be a lot more happy to unwrap them and find out what those presents are?
I don't mean that kind of presence.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm talking about having bases, having soldiers, having weapons, including nuclear weapons. I checked in writing these series of stories I did on this subject. It took a while to get an answer, but I did finally get an answer. And I asked, does the U.S. have nuclear weapons in Okinawa? And when I finally got the answer from the military, it was... the spokesperson confirmed, they said, no, all U.S. nuclear weapons have been removed from Okinawa at the time of reversion, when it went from being a U.S. colony. It was held as a U.S. property until May 1972.
So if they said all the weapons have been removed, then that is a tacit admission that there were nuclear weapons
right.
there.
Which is unusual, since normally you won't get that kind of a response.
And given the U.S.'s... policy of always being honest about all our military affairs, you know, I'm going to take his word for it.
Yeah. So
I'm being sarcastic, but you know, it's just hard to believe that you know, they don't have military or nuclear weapons. You know, it's been well known Israel's had them for years. It just came out 8 months ago. Mm-hmm. So for them to say it's an admission that they had them, and it's preposterous to believe that, just like the Star Wars program was never shut down.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those things where the more bases we have, the more animosity the world has against us, and I don't believe it makes us stronger.
Well, that's a lot of people make that same argument, and so.
And I'm a conservative. I mean, I'm a libertarian. People will call me a liberal for that statement, but.
Yeah. Okay. Is it liberal to love peace?
Liberal is, the true meaning of liberal is liberty, freedom, not domination.
Yeah, well, I think nobody likes being dominated from outside, certainly not in Okinawa, just as people in Hawaii don't want to be dominated.
Actually,
from outside.
Some people pay really good money
That's a,
for
a
that.
Different situation.
It's a different story.
But anyway, I wanted to people to have a little better understanding and awareness, which is why I went over there and wrote a series of articles.
And where are those articles? Because I don't even think we mentioned where those articles are.
You can find them if you just search truthout.org has an article. There's one in Huffington Post, Hawaii, Honolulu Civil Beat. Two articles were published a few weeks ago on Al Jazeera America website. So if you just search Al Jazeera America Okinawa, you'll find them. There was a good TV piece that was paired with, that was produced, a five-minute television report. And then there are a couple more articles coming out in Okinawa and in Hawaii.
Well, John Lentman, I want to thank you so much for joining us this afternoon here on Out of the Box.
Thank you, John.
It's been a real
thank
treat.
You,
it's thank you. It's really eye-opening to go to a place and see it and talk to the people, actually go there. And I want to thank you for doing that and bringing back your observations and your experiences to us here.
Yeah, thank you for allowing me to come up and share them. I appreciate it.
Much mahalo.
Coming up next is going to be Dove with Evolve, and you know, maybe that's kind of the punchline of the whole show. Like maybe a little bit of evolution might be just what we need. Going to go out with some Graham Nash. Want to thank you guys for listening this afternoon, and stick around for Dove, followed by Slim and the Commodore. We got a tremendous amount of evening of fantastic music. Dove, do you have any idea what you're going to play tonight? No. And that's the way the show always is. So aloha, everybody.
And once again, we apologize for the phone hiccups. The phone was malfunctioning tonight. So for the callers that called in, we apologize. And we will have it fixed ASAP.
All right. Aloha, everybody. Aloha. And ahui ho.